It's Tuesday, February 8, 2011. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. It seems that every day we're beginning our conversation with the nation of Egypt, and for good reason. Of all the places in the world to begin a conversation about the events of the day, it's hard to begin any place other than in Cairo and the ongoing drama of what's going to happen with the regime of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak. There are some interesting developments of the last several days and hours. One is the disposition of the American government. Ever since this thing began, the American administration has been obviously seeking to find its voice. Now, what we know in terms of public diplomacy is always the tip of the iceberg. What's going on under the surface in terms of the diplomacy that matters most, well, that's largely hidden from view. Historians perhaps later have the opportunity to tell us what really went on. But then again, in the age of WikiLeaks, perhaps it's only a matter until the next screen dump. But in terms of public diplomacy, the American administration has been going out of its way to stress the need for a peaceful transition. That has been a unison coming from Western democratic governments for the last several days, but something new is now coming from the Americans. Even as the Americans are calling for a peaceful transfer of power, and even as President Obama was last week publicly warning the Egyptian president about staying in office too long, delaying that transition, now the United States Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, is warning against a transition that is too fast. Now, why would this happen? Well, what has happened to intervene between those particular statements is the fact that the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood now puts Western governments in the position of real and direct worry about what kind of shape a new Egyptian government might take. Let's remember what we've been talking about. It's not just that the people of Egypt are seeking a new economic reality and a new political reality. The question is, are they also going to be seeking, by means probably of a democratic election, to put in place what amounts to an Islamic Republic? Now, this goes back to a warning from Henry Kissinger of many years ago. When the United States government was in the position of being charged with being anti-democratic during the 1970s, it was charged that the American government was too cozy with certain dictators. The response of Henry Kissinger was that a democracy is not one man, one vote, one time. In other words, if the conditions are such that a democratic election would lead to a non-democratic result, it really is not a move towards democracy. What we see in the give and take, even within the American administration, even putting the statements of President Obama and Secretary of State Clinton side by side, what we see is the very real worry that if President Mubarak does leave, what will be left in his wake is a vacuum that Islamic extremism is likely to fill. Now, of course, the issue of anarchy is always out there. That is how President Mubarak has kept himself in office, by promising to maintain order, much like Mussolini in his fascist regime in Italy. He made the trains run on time. The difference, of course, is that Mussolini actually did make the trains run on time, where Mubarak has made promises that he hasn't even kept. The Mubarak regime is no longer legitimate in the eyes of the Egyptian people. That's clear. But the process to come, we have to hope that there can be the intervention of good and reasonable citizens within Egypt, a legitimate political opposition with organic political leadership, who can guide the next phase of this transition to something that we can only hope and pray will be better. There have been some other troubling developments in recent days. One of them is that some significant leaders in Egypt, including Mr. El-Baradei, who is being held up as one of the logical political alternatives to Mr. Mubarak, has been sending signals in the Islamic press that are gravely worrying to Israel. Now, what's going on in all of this is even hard to determine in terms of the truth of the matter, because, as you know, the press and certainly the international blogosphere includes many statements and prognostications that turn out not to be true. But in any event, it will be incumbent upon the new Egyptian leadership, whatever its form, to make very clear what its commitments are. And we hope to pray that one of those commitments will certainly be the protection of the peace treaty with Israel. Another thing to watch is the fact that a good many of these governments, including the government of Hosni Mubarak, but also many other governments in the Gulf and in the Arab region, are being accused of siding with the great Satan, the United States. That's enough to rob the regime of legitimacy in the eyes of many Muslims. And for that reason, we have to watch what happens in the aftermath of a transition like this, because it could be to a new, very overt anti-Americanism as well. We'll be watching the events. They can change by the hour, if not by the minute. The New York Times has a very important article out over the weekend. The headline is this: Afghan rights fall short for Christian converts. Now, this is a story that is not only about foreign relations, it's about the United States and its responsibility. Ray Rivera writes, and his dateline is from Kabul in Afghanistan. Let me read to you his originating sentences. The jail commander had remained silent as the prisoner, Syed Musa, told a reporter about his journey from Islam to Christianity, his secret baptism 9 years earlier, his faith in Jesus Christ and the promise of heaven. But when Mr. Musa said he believed the Bible but also loved the Quran's teachings, it was too much. "So you love the Quran and the Bible," the commander broke in incredulously. "What kind of love is this?" Now, that's the setup for a story about this man, Syed Musa, who's on trial for his life, arrested for the capital crime in Afghanistan of converting to Christianity. Now, even as he is in jail awaiting a prison term, which is the very least he can expect, and a trial that could lead to his execution, the American government appears to be largely silent. Now, even as Mr. Eikenberry there, our ambassador in Afghanistan, has been making all the right public statements, the reality is that the limitations of American power are demonstrated in the fact that the man was arrested and remains in jail. Now, let's talk about American responsibility here. In recent weeks, there have been a flurry of news accounts demonstrating the perilous situation of Christians in the Middle East in general, and in particular in much of the Muslim world. And you look at this and you come to understand the virtual evacuation of Christians from Iraq is following the virtual evacuation of Christians from Iran. And now the virtual eradication of Christians from Afghanistan as well. Now, the American government has put itself and its own soldiers on the line here. American combat troops largely won the right for the Afghans to have the liberties they now enjoy. And even as Americans are struggling to maintain order in that fractious nation, it seems almost inconceivable that a regime that is supported by the United States could here demonstrate such a blatant disregard for basic human freedoms and religious liberty. What would it mean for the United States to supposedly strike a great blow for democracy in lands like Iraq and Afghanistan if what is left in the wake of all of this American effort and all those American lives are regimes that hold only hatred to the idea of religious liberty? Regimes where it remains a capital crime to convert from Islam to Christianity. In what sense did the American people do anything in terms of leading these nations to a new and better understanding of freedom if, again, what is left are Islamic governments that operate pretty much like the Islamic governments that went before? The distinctions in terms of human rights and human liberty between the Western world and the Islamic world is never more dramatically displayed than in a situation such as this one man sitting in a Kabul prison on trial for his life for honestly admitting that he has converted from Islam to Christianity. Now, there's one section in this report that should send a chill down our spines. It says this: it is the case that this crime is a capital crime. But so long as American troops are on the ground, it says here, so long as the American government is involved, it's unlikely that this man will be executed. Well, if that seems like some kind of assurance, it should not be. We shouldn't be reassured by that kind of statement because, after all, we will not be there forever. And the other threat that's implicit in an article like this is exactly what we saw in Pakistan in recent days. If, indeed, it is a court that falls short of executing Islamic justice, as is called for by the mob, well, the mob will do it itself. In the United States, a very interesting story has to do with the shooting of Representative Gabrielle Giffords and the aftermath of her recovery, for which we are all praying, and then the decision made by her husband, Captain Mark Kelly, as to whether or not he will serve as captain and commander of the next and potentially last space shuttle launch. Now, it's not only the launch, of course, but the mission that he will command. And as the decision was announced over the weekend, Captain Kelly said that he would indeed serve as commander of the space shuttle mission. Now, immediately there's been a flurry of all kinds of discussion as to whether this is a good and right and just and loving thing for a husband to do. Well, there's really no way that we can understand what goes on in the relationship between this husband and wife, and we should not seek to interfere in their zone of privacy. At this point, we need to pray for both of them, but it could very well be that Representative Giffords will be aided in her recovery by the knowledge that her husband is doing what he set his life to do. It could very well be that one of her acts of love to her husband is indeed encouraging him to do this. We don't know. We do know this. It can only become more poignant in terms of our prayers for Representative Giffords to imagine that even as she is recovering in Houston, her husband is commanding the last space shuttle mission of the United States manned space program. These are two lives, both of them of historic stature, in one marriage, obviously, now lived out before the public as well. At my website yesterday at albertmuller.com, I posted an article entitled The New Atheism and the Dogma of Darwinism. It's an important article about which much has already been said, but the point I want to make that you can read in the article is that it took evolution to solve a major problem for atheism. In the words of Richard Dawkins, one of the four horsemen of the new atheism, Darwinism allowed him to become an intellectually fulfilled atheist. Every worldview has to answer the question, why does anything exist and where did it all come from? And until Darwinism, there was no real answer for atheists to give. So the commonalities between atheism and Darwinism are never more clear than in the ardent advocacy of evolution on the part of these new atheists. Finally, tomorrow I'm going to be talking about an article in the current issue of Newsweek magazine. Lisa Miller wrote an article entitled, What the Bible Really Says About Sex. Well, that's an article that's likely to get some attention. She interviewed me for the article. I appear in the article. It has to do with two new scholarly works out debunking biblical notions of sexuality. We'll be talking about it tomorrow. I'll be writing about it this week. It's just another reminder that you never know what the day's news is going to bring. But you do know it's our responsibility to be a part of the conversation. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmuller.com. You can follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/Albert Mohler. For more information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. For information about Boyce College, go to boycecollege.com. I'm really looking forward to this weekend. Recalibrate is our conference, the Give Me an Answer Apologetics Conference for college students. C.J. Mahaney, my dear friend, is going to be here with us. I'm going to be speaking. Dr. Russell Moore will be speaking. It is Friday and Saturday of this week on this campus. There's still time for you to sign up. Just go to sbts.edu. I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.